This is Oklahoma Perspective. Kevin Stitt has been Oklahoma's governor for a few weeks now, and he's been making a lot of changes. Recently, he talked with KRMG's Russell Mills about those changes and why they're being made.
You've decided to shake things up a little bit, and yesterday you signed your first batch of executive orders. There were four, if I recall. And the one that probably has the biggest impact is obviously how you've comprised your cabinet. And can you talk a little bit about some of the changes that you've made and why you decided to go that direction?
Sure, absolutely. Well, for all the listeners out there, the governor's cabinet really is supposed to run all the different agencies. It didn't really make sense. And I looked and studied, you know, Henry's cabinet and Walters. I studied Keating's and Fallon's and all the previous governors and to see how they did it. And there was not a COO. There wasn't a chief operating officer. So I added that as a cabinet position. I had to take away a couple other ones, but I made the – it was very important to have a chief operating officer that ran agency accountability. And then I wanted a digital transformation per person. So we had a secretary of digital transformation, and that person is bringing state government to the 21st century, focused on how we deliver services through our state agencies. So that was really important. Secretary of Budget, I have one person just focused on the budget, which is really, really important. And then I broke out Health and Human Services, used to be under one secretary. So I separated that, and I have a health and a mental health. Now, one person focused on health and mental health, and then one person focused on human services and child services. And so all those kind of little tweaks make sense in how we're going to get accountability. I think that's going to be a huge game changer. And then if you add that with what I'm asking the legislature for is the ability to hire and fire agency heads, not to be a bad guy, but to create the accountability and structure that we need, then you're going to see the needle moved a whole bunch on all these different agencies as we're delivering services and being a customer-focused government.
I would assume that the Secretary of Digital, I'm not sure what the exact title is, but that person is going to be also helping to try to maybe modernize, streamline some of the systems that state government uses.
That's exactly what they're doing. Digital transformation, and we all have iPhones. We all communicate, with technology. So there's no reason that we can't push information to our citizens where they can know when their car tag needs to be renewed, and when they need to get a new fishing license, or when their driver's license needs to get updated. So all those kind of things. I'm just telling our departments, reimagine how we deliver services. And so the technology's there. We know how to do it. We just have to have the effort and the willpower to do things a little differently. So you can also save FTEs or employee counts when you deliver technology better. So those are all things that I'm trying to make sure that we have more of a customer-focused government.
I spoke with Secretary Copeland yesterday, Secretary of Commerce and Workforce, I think is his title, and he was talking about a Secretary of Native American Affairs. Did I get that right?
Correct, yes.
That seems like something new and something that maybe one wonders why we didn't have one of those before. Talk a little bit about that post.
Sure. Well, the Native Americans, it's a strategic advantage that Oklahoma has. We've got 39 tribes in our state, and I wanted the tribes to know that they have access to the governor's cabinet. So we have this liaison that can communicate with the 39 tribes, can help with economic development. There's federal dollars that come into our state because we have the tribes here. So I just wanted to make sure that they had a great working relationship with the governor. One tribe employs 14,000 people. We want to make sure that, we're utilizing, we're working together to make sure that, we're either delivering health care in certain areas of the state. They have a road and bridge money, the tribes do, that we can use some of those dollars for matching dollars for other projects around our state. So just working together and having somebody that can kind of bring me and talk with the other cabinet members on other assets we have, it just makes sense to me to deliver better services for Oklahoma.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the freeze on state agencies hiring third-party lobbyists and providing a full accounting of what third-party lobbyists they are contracted with currently. I thought that was kind of interesting. What is What is the goal there?
Sure. Well, you know, we've got, and it's hard for me to find, and that was my first executive order here, was, hey, I need all, every agency to tell me how much they're spending on third-party lobbyists, how much it's costing us, and so I can determine if it's justified or not. So there's if an industry hires a lobbyist to advocate for their issues, that's one thing. But as the chief executive of the state, I find it troubling that we're spending tax dollars. One agency will spend tax dollars to go hire a third-party lobbyist to come try to kill make sense legislation to get more efficient, to deliver better services. So that was my problem with it. And I think Oklahomans agree with me. You can't have one department fighting what's good for the whole team. And so that was my problem with it. And that's why I'm trying to get to the bottom of that for Oklahoma.
And I mean, so one agency is spending taxpayer dollars to battle another state agency? Is that what's going on?
It could be. So you could take any agency. We've got about 120 agencies, and I think about 70 of them do this. They'll hire a lobbyist, and then that lobbyist is trying to lobby for the legislature for more money, or if a legislature thinks we need to change and do things differently, deliver better services, and the agency thinks it's going to cut into their budget, then they will try to lobby the legislature against voting that way. You see what I'm saying? It just complicates it. It would be like an IT department in a private company hiring a third party to come lobby for more money for just that IT department. It doesn't make sense. You've got to have a 30,000-foot view. The governor has got to look at what's best for the whole team and what's best for all of Oklahoma. And when you have all these different silos that are only focused on what's best for their little silo, that's how we get in these problems. And so that's what I'm trying to correct, to make sure that the legislatures don't have that pressure on them. And especially from our own dollars, from our own taxpayer dollars, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, that's the part that has me scratching my head. Okay, a third executive order dealt with a hiring freeze. And my understanding is you've lifted the freeze on unclassified employees, but maintained it on classified employees, which I believe the bulk of state employees are. Can you kind of explain the difference and why you would unfreeze one and not the other?
Sure. So classified employees are a protected class, and unclassified employees are like at-will employees. Well, I believe there's tons of protection for employees. If they were wrongfully terminated, there's still access to the courts. There's access to the Labor Department to make a case on why they were wrongfully terminated. So I don't think we need classified employees with this merit protection, because what happens, there's two things that happen. Number one, there's some folks there that you can't get rid of if they are bad actors or they're not doing their job well. But on the other side, the really good ones, and there's plenty of great classified employees, they're stuck in this box. We can't promote them. They all have to be treated equally the same on pay. You can't really incentivize them to do more. So I don't want to expand more classified employees, but I want to give the agency directors the ability to run their agency. So if they needed to hire non-classified employees, we want to give them the ability to do that, restructure. And then over time, we have some classified employees that the job is obsolete. We don't need it anymore, but it's still protected. And so we've got to move. If we're going to move forward, I am in the weeds now, and I'm telling Oklahomans, here's what we need to do to move the needle. And so that's why that one is really important.
Okay, and the last one had to do with the state King Air aircraft. This is a twin prop, right? Airplane.
Correct.
That basically belonged to the governor's office, and you were like, don't really need that airplane. So you've signed an executive order to what? Sell it?
That's exactly right. And, the governor, it was for the governor's personal travel. So I wanted Oklahomans to know that I'm not only looking at everybody else's budget, because I'm the chief executive and Oklahomans want me to do this, but I'm also looking at the personal travel, the personal budget of the governor's office. And it just didn't make sense, the amount of money we were spending for the travel that I was going to do. And so we decided to sell it. And then this popped up. I found out that there's actually two King Airs, and we're going to sell both of them.
So there's a spare. Wow.
There was a spare.
Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt. Tulsa City Councilman Phil Lakin is proposing a name change for Riverside Drive.
The first thing is it Riverside Drive, Riverside Parkway, Riverside. I've never been totally clear on the name of that stupid road. Everybody just says Riverside.
That's exactly the point. Yeah, everywhere else in Tulsa, the road that lies on the east bank that runs right alongside the river is called Riverside. It's either Riverside Drive or Riverside Parkway until you get to 101st. And then from 101st south, it's called Delaware Avenue until it gets to 121st, and then 121st goes off to the east. So that roughly 2 mile section is and always has been called Delaware Avenue, which is unusual because if we think about Delaware, Delaware, even up at the University of Tulsa, lies between Lewis and Harvard at 81st. It lies between Lewis and Harvard. By the time Delaware finishes in far south Tulsa, you're about a quarter of a mile off of Yale. So it drastically changes direction because of the orientation of that road far down south.
It seems kind of nonsensical, but one has to remember that 40 or 50 years ago, there really wasn't much down there, and not a lot of traffic, and no people were driving there, and so it wasn't a thing. It's becoming a thing, you think?
Yeah, you know, there are a bunch of neighborhoods down there. There aren't very many businesses, but as we continue to progress southward, then it does become more confusing, even for the people who live there. I did a poll on Nextdoor, and 305 people responded, which I thought was pretty astonishingly high. And I just asked, what do you call the road that lies south of 101st and runs along the river? And 83% of those people said Riverside Drive. 10% said that they called it Delaware, which was the correct answer. And then 7% use a really old term called River Road. But I had posted something about Delaware being closed at about 116th. This is now 10 days ago or so. And it was closed for 5 days. The entire road was closed for a construction project. And, you know, I was being a diligent counselor, just telling people, hey, make other plans because you will not be able to go north or south at this point. And then I got a lot of feedback saying, you know, it sure would be nice if you told us Riverside was closed. And I pointed them to my post in Nextdoor and on Facebook and in other venues. And they said, well, okay, now I see that you did do it, but none of us call it Delaware. And so I just decided, hey, let's just cease all the confusion. If most of us call it Riverside Drive, and if it's Riverside Drive from 101st as far north as you can go on that road that's on the east bank that runs right alongside the river, then let's just call it what we all call it already and call it what it is. So I think it's a very simple change. I think we have to change 9 street signs. I know of 2 houses that front Delaware, so I believe that their home address will change. And then there's just a handful of businesses that run along Delaware that would have to change their address too. So we've extended the date of the change to August 1st, 2019 to make it easy and economical more economical, because I know there will be an expense for those businesses and homes. And then the U.S. Post Office has said that they'll continue to deliver to the addresses even after the date of effectiveness. So they'll deliver to those addresses until August 1st of 2020, even if they decide not to change their stationery or their address technically or anything else. So it gives people a lot of time to absorb the additional expenses and headaches. Though, again, there luckily aren't that many people who will be negatively impacted by the change.
All right. So have you heard from any of those people who are kind of raising their hackles about this at all? Or does it sound like it's going to be fairly smooth sailing, which is not something that happens all that often in any level of government?
I've heard nothing negatively by those who will be affected. I've heard the negative comments that I've received are those typical ones where people say, don't you have anything better to do? And I have been responding and engaging with those people, just telling them that it may take me longer to respond to their social media posts than it does for me to actually change the name of the street, because really it's like a 2-line ordinance change. It's very simple. And obviously, I'm highly involved in a lot of other things that are much more beneficial to the city of Tulsa. This is just one very incidental thing that will help resolve some confusion. And again, just name a stretch of road or keep a stretch of road named what it is elsewhere, the same all the way through the southern part of our city.
And, you know, I got to tell you straight up, I would not be calling you on this, but I was assigned to. I don't know why it caught the attention of certain staff in our management here, but it did. Maybe we got some texts or some calls from people asking us to look into it because they've heard. Who knows? But, you know, I always like to put the rumor mill down and just get the facts out there. So I do appreciate
it. I don't know how it made it into the Tulsa world where it did either. I don't know. I mean, I was just trying to communicate this and resolve it all via social media with those who are most impacted. And it feels like the vast majority of the people that I've talked to or that have responded to the social media post are very much in favor of this.
So they're good. All right. Well, what's the timeline? I mean, when does this happen? Or, you know, are you guys voting on it this week or what's up with that?
We'll talk about it at committee, and then it will be on first reading for this Wednesday, and then we'll vote on it next week.
Okay, so kind of fast track it. But again, this is not earth-shattering stuff. What did you say, nine street signs?
right. This is very easy. Right, in the grand scheme of things, this is just a non-event. Certainly, if we were affecting a number of businesses and things, then this would have been handled totally in a different way. Right. I would have gone and talked to all those businesses, all those neighbors. We would have done a lot more intense just review of what the benefits are to changing the name. But like I said, there just are so few impacted at this point, and I think the benefits far outweigh the costs. Relating to people giving directions to their homes, and then just the ordinary course of conversation, just being able to talk to a person and have that person know what road you're talking about, instead of today's conversations where we have to name all three names used for that road in order for the other person to know what road we're actually talking about, which is kind of ridiculous.
Which takes me back to my initial question, which you dodged, sir.
What did I say?
I want to know, is it Riverside Parkway or Riverside Drive, or is it Riverside Parkway in some places and Riverside Drive in others? Or do you
It
know?
Is different. So,
with
that? We stumbled upon that. I don't know. It was so in our analysis of this, we've determined that it's the signs say Riverside Drive until you get to 71st Street. And then from 71st Street South, they say Riverside Parkway. And it is a wider street and thoroughfare, and the speeds are increased from 71st Street to the south. We're going to stay with Riverside Parkway just to follow that name all the way through to create even less confusion. But we have discovered in, I think it's called the Highway Master Plan or the Transportation Master Plan or something like that, that it was supposed to be Parkway from I-44 to the south, but it's Drive from I-44 to 71st. So I'm not going to touch that. It is what it is. And I know people are very prideful about what they call it and what they have called it there. And there's a lot more businesses and everything else that would be affected. Well, I guess there's actually not very many
minimal,
businesses.
I would think. Yeah, there aren't a lot of businesses along there. And, I mean, changing it from Parkway to Drive wouldn't seem like it would be a huge confusion for the or the other way. I don't know what.
I don't know. That's not my council district, and I'm going to let the councilors for those areas decide if it needs any modification.
Tulsa City Councilman Phil Lakin. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.